Welcome to Hollywood and Levine. I am Ken Levine, your podcast host. This week, my guest is Preston Beckman. He is the former head of scheduling for the National Broadcasting Company back when they were doing must-see TV. In other words, shows that people actually wanted to watch. Also, he was the head of scheduling for the Fox Network during the American Idol era. Now he is a media consultant. This is part two of our two-part interview. If you missed part one, after you listen to this one, go back and check that out. Last week, we talked about the state of broadcast networks. This week, we're going to talk about Emmys and the future of Emmys. We're going to talk about cable networks and can they survive. Also, we're going to center on streamers. You know, the streaming model has really changed over the last couple of years. We'll talk about those changes and what is in store for the future. So you want to check this out, part two with Preston Beckman, right here on Hollywood and Levine. I think the Emmy contract is up after next year. Mm-hmm. And for years, the Emmy contract was the four networks would just rotate which yeah. one aired them that particular year. If I'm a broadcast network, why would I possibly want to air the Emmys when A, it gets terrible numbers now, and B, it's basically just a commercial for my competitors since none of my shows are nominated for Emmys? If I'm NBC, why would I possibly want to air the Emmys and pay big money for it too?
A couple of things. I agree with you. I mean, if you remember, at some point there was a Cable Ace Awards.
Yeah.
Which was just for cable. And then at some point, the Emmys became the Cable Ace Awards. And now they're the Cable Ace / Streaming Awards. But remember that each of these networks is part of something bigger, and shows that might air on Peacock or Hulu are part of ABC or part of NBC. So you're still kind of promoting shows that are part of your corporation. But I think if I was a network, I would create a network award show, even a network cable award show, and exclude the streamers and let the Emmys sell Emmys to one of the streaming services.
Right.
I mean, what's so difficult about creating a show that celebrates, television series that are longer than six episodes and are seen by a couple of million viewers?
The enemas.
Yeah. That you can measure as opposed to seen by people who a streaming service says, trust us. It's a hit, but we don't have to tell you what it is, you know, how many people watch it. So I would almost go in the opposite direction, and some enterprising, or even if the four networks got together and said, we're going to create a show that celebrates us. And I wouldn't do it in September. I'd do it in May at the end of the traditional season, separate it, and let the TV Academy sell the Emmys somewhere else.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you.
Yeah.
So moving on to the cable networks, since we sort of have a nice segue there, with streamers now being pretty much the first go-to option that people are flocking to after networks, if you're a cable network, USA, Bravo, A&E, etc., are your days doomed?
I don't think so in the short run, at least. Again, you're a provider for a streaming service. So, and in some cases, you drop your show at the same time it's put on the streaming service, but not everybody has the streamer. So for instance, 90 Day Fiance, which is our unfortunately addiction on Sunday night, we used to watch it, we used to record it, watch it on TLC. Now it drops instantaneously on Max. So but we started by watching it on TLC, and there's a lot the majority of people in the United States do not have Max. So if you want to watch 90 Day Fiance, which a lot of people do, you have to go on to TLC. So I think that, until the streamers are being the sub rates are in the 40%, 50% of the country, which they're not, you still need your cable networks to launch these shows and supply your streaming services with them. And now at some point, I might go, and I'm not there yet, I might go, I really don't need DirecTV. I can just subscribe to all the streaming services. But, and I believe this, and I've sure we've talked about it, if you do that, it's more expensive than having DirecTV. You have to pay for each of them. You need to make sure your Wi-Fi, your internet is strong enough and capable enough. So when you add it all up, you're not any better off, and you're probably worse off if you say, I'm going to ditch cable or satellite and go just to streamers. So I don't see where they go away in the short term. I just don't. I mean, at some point, I think there'll be more consolidation, and there'll be something that looks very much like cable, or satellite, where you pay, I'll make it up, $80 a month for Max and Netflix. Well, I don't know about Netflix, Net Max and Peacock and Hulu and Disney Plus, and you just pay one fee to a provider for all your streamers. And then at that point, maybe we can have that discussion. But I don't think we're there yet. I don't think we're anywhere close to it.
Yeah, I remember the big attraction of Netflix originally was you get all these movies and all these shows in one place. Well, now there's competition, and you don't. I guess too, sports is a big factor in cable networks, and I know that the NBA contract is up after this season. And it certainly behooves TNT and ESPN to fork over a lot of money to stay in the NBA. And now you're going to have streamers that are going to compete with you. And from what I understand, NBC wants to get back into the NBA game. But for cable networks, sports seems to be a must-have.
And again, you're not, if, like, for instance, if NBC wants to get back into the NBA, you're talking about the NBC network, you're talking about USA Network, you're talking about Peacock. Same thing with Turner. You're talking about Max, you're talking about TBS, TNT. So these deals now aren't with a broadcast network or a cable network. They're with something bigger, where your stuff is going to appear either simultaneously or exclusively on one of their platforms. And you're seeing it also with professional wrestling, which I'm involved with, and where the WWE just made a deal with Netflix. It's going to be one of their first weekly live events. And it's a huge deal. I think it was for $10 billion or
Why
something.
did Fox let it go?
They let it go because it's a money loser for them. I know it. I know for a fact they had a number that they felt would make it at least break even, and it did not achieve that number. It was about half of what on 1849 that they expected it to be. And the wrestling, the people who will advertise in pro wrestling are limited to some extent. So for them, it was actually a money loser. Ironically, it was the highest rated network show on Friday night, and they're going to have to spend some money to replace it. I would not be surprised if they just keep it for their sports division and run college basketball or MLB or whatever, and continue Friday nights as some kind of a sports night for Fox.
You and I have been doing this now for a number of years, and I remember very early on we were talking about Netflix, and you predicted that they're going to go to a commercial model at some point. You're right. Your prediction came true, sir.
Thank you. Well, as you know, all television regresses to the mean. It all you know, you and I have been sitting there watching this all evolve and going, well, what was wrong with how it was working? Yeah, I mean, sure, it was flawed in some way, but what was wrong with it at the end of the day? And I've always believed it's about technology driving these decisions, not about a business. It's like, well, now there's streaming, so we got to get involved with streaming. Well, now we're involved with streaming. Well, how do we need subs. We don't have any advertising. So we need to do this with a subscription model, and it didn't work, you know? So, and again, people are fine watching commercials. It's only television critics and a very small elite group of people who feel, no, there should be no commercials on television. People are fine with it, you know? And the other prediction that I made, if I can pat myself on the back, was, and I may have mentioned this in the past, a good friend of mine, Melvin Benoit, and I met with the Netflix executives back in around 2016 and pitched them fast channels. You know, we said, you know, why don't you, it's very hard to navigate the site, it's very hard to know what's on the air. Why don't you create channels like a mystery channel, like a comedy channel, like, you know, like a science fiction channel that's streaming continuously? That's basically you're putting your program on there. So at least if you like mysteries, you can go, well, I'll go to the mystery channel and you're showing what the new so, stuff that's already on, plus stuff that's about to drop. And people go, oh, I like that. And you just click something and you're now subscribing to it. And we even said you can sell commercials on these channels. And, you know, we got one of these, you know, thank you very much. We'll think about it. Never heard
And
from them.
there is that model. It's what, like Tubi and Pluto and some of those?
Netflix is about to do it.
Oh, Netflix is about to do
Yeah,
it.
Netflix is about to do that, exactly that. And I think they would've been doing it in France for a while. So again, what are fast channels? They're television stations. They're basically, what do you do when you turn on your TV? You sit back and you watch whatever channel, you know, you choose to watch. So it's all sort of coming back to what it was, including what's popular on Netflix or some of these streaming services. Even putting aside the Suits and Seinfeld and the fact that the majority of viewing to streamers are established hit shows, the product that they're putting on is becoming more and more like broadcast television. Shows like Virgin River and Lincoln Lawyer on Netflix. I mean, these are shows that could easily be on the broadcast networks. Even some of their comedies look
Sure.
like, you know,
The
One Day at a Time.
Upshaws, my daughter and her husband are executive producers of The Upshaws with Kim Fields and Wanda Sykes and Mike Epps. And yeah, that's a kind of a throwback Norman Lear type of show that Netflix is over the moon. They're thrilled with it. It hits all their
Right.
algorithms,
Yeah.
whatever they are.
And they've appropriated laugh tracks. Laugh tracks were dismissed by the broadcast networks for a long time. And now you're seeing more and more shows on streamers with laugh tracks.
Well,
So it
and they
all,
do it in front of a studio audience
yeah,
as
it's
well.
so
So
it
I want to
all,
bring up a topic
okay.
that I talked about a few weeks ago on this podcast, and that's the notion of second screens. What second screens are, or is that if you're a writer on a streamer, you are getting notes from the platform to dumb down your show, to repeat exposition two or three times because they don't want to really distract or lose the viewer who only has the TV on in the background as their second screen, and their
Yeah.
primary focus is on their computer or their phone. Now, to me, in addition to it being super insulting to writers, is the takeaway here that the streamers don't give a shit whether you're actually watching or not, just as long as the damn thing is on?
Well, I think that the way media is consumed for people our age is different from the way it's consumed by younger people. I think for a lot of people, it's very natural to multi-view, multitask between your phone and your television, or between your iPad and your phone. So I think that for a lot of viewers, they're not necessarily watching to be completely absorbed in the show. It's on, they hear, they follow it, but they're not necessarily absorbed in it. And I'm sure for everybody, there are certain shows where you say, I'm going to put down my, it's very, my phone and my laptop, and I'm going to watch this because it deserves to be watched. We're a little more than halfway through Ripley on Netflix, which is an amazingly, I mean, visually, you have to watch it. I mean, you can't have your laptop on. And I found very quickly that we will watch episodes and I will never look at anything else because it's that kind of a show. But on the other hand, if I'm watching sports or wrestling, I'm always doing something else. Then you hear a crack of the bat, you look up.
Right. Well, I understand that. But my contention is that this isn't a new phenomenon because whereas now maybe you say, well, someone is looking at their computer. Well, in the past, looking at the computer was they were making dinner while the TV was on.
Oh,
They
I
were
see.
ironing when the TV was on. They were knitting when the TV was on, and they managed to somehow follow it, because I think that for the people who aren't on their phone, they're watching a show, and they're hearing the same thing over and over and over again, and they're going, God, this I know this already. It's like you're rewarding the people who aren't watching, and you're penalizing the people who are paying attention.
Well, first of all, you hit on the reason why Jeopardy's been on the air for forever, because that's that and Wheel are the ultimate I'm doing something else. I'm preparing dinner shows.
Exactly.
And it's also true of most reality shows where you come back from the break and they spend 3 minutes telling you what you've just seen.
Right.
I don't want to sound cynical, but I think you have to figure out how to, you meaning, writers, and honestly, the visual of it all, have to figure out ways to make your show must watch as opposed to must be on, if you know what I mean. And, I think that people who are looking for those kind of shows watch it. I can't believe, again, I haven't seen Shogun, but everything I can't believe they told them to dumb that down. There's a lot of stuff that I watch where I don't feel it's dumb. Some of it I watch is dumbed down, but I think it's more of a challenge to creatives to figure out how to fight against that. And
Now,
as
they
I said,
figured it out in Game of Thrones early on, where they would have exposition scenes in brothels. So there was naked people having sex in the background.
right, but
Okay, you weren't checking your email.
right, yeah, but well, also it was so complex in terms of the families and who was who and everything.
Right.
Watch a lot of international shows, especially mysteries and stuff, and with names that, especially Indian police procedurals, which we like, where you have to watch it because the names are so confusing that you literally almost have to sit there and write down their names so you can remember who's who.
Like
So
reading a Russian novel.
I mean, I think that, I mean, I don't think I'm that unique. I mean, I find that there is certain, like 90 Day Fiance, I will multitask, because I just wait for the dumb thing and then I look up. And if you miss it, you'll see it after the break again. But I think that there's a lot that I think a lot of people will watch shows. I can't believe if you're a fan of Star Wars that you're necessarily multitasking while that's on. I think there's a lot that where people, lean into a show still. I'm not dismissing what you're saying. I'm just saying that I don't think it's everything.
Notice too, streamers are starting to reduce their library and they're charging more for subscriptions and they're adding commercials, and you're going like, well, now you're getting a lot less and you're paying more for it. Is it that costly to keep things up on your streamer, up on Netflix? I mean, even if nobody watches a particular movie, just the fact that it's there and you can say we have 10,000 movies to choose from, even though people are only going to choose from, say, 800 of them, the fact that there's 10,000 make you as a subscriber feel okay, I have every option available to me.
Well, I'm sure they have their computer models, and they have the cost of keeping something on versus the number of people who download it or the number of subscribers they get by having that. There are also more and more free streaming services. You have Tubi, which is free. You have Pluto, which is free. So a lot of these services are like, look at all the crap I have on here. But they have a different model. They're advertiser supported. So I think you still, I remember when we were working with David Zaslav on the launch of Discovery Plus, my friend Vince Manzi and me, at one point we said to him, do you really think saying, he wanted to say something like, there's 35,000 titles. And I said, nobody's going to watch all that stuff. So at some point, I think that the streaming services have matured. And again, getting back to the comp, you know, the that they're becoming networks that, more and more people look to a streaming service and they go, well, is it a new movie? Is it something that I say, oh, I'll wait for it to come on, Netflix or Paramount Plus or whatever. And those are the ones I watch. Or and it's like, okay, I'm there for the new shows. Once something drops, it's generally there in the, recently added thing. And that's probably where a majority of non network repeats viewing goes. So at some point, I think that for most people, they don't, I think we're beyond the point of going, oh my God, look at this library of movies or library of shows. That's not how I'm using these services anymore. And if it's too costly to keep them on the air, I can say, we'll drop them and they'll be sold somewhere else anyway. So they usually don't sit there lying fallow. They'll go over to Tubi, they'll go over to Pluto or one of those services.
Okay, well, that brings up another question. I don't know if you could answer this or not, but what is the average turnover of subscribers a month?
I don't know, but I know it exists. I mean, I think people, again,
Especially young people. Young people will go in Netflix for a month and then they'll drop it and they'll go to Prime and then they've seen the show they want to see and they'll drop it and they'll move around. There's no allegiance at all. So there
No, well,
must
again,
be a high turnover.
well, if you think about it, I mean, you're coming for a show. That's why I think more and more streamers are going away from the binge model and are going towards the weekly, the weekly dropping of shows,
Right.
because you have a show that's, 8 weeks long. That's 2 months subscription versus a show that can be watched on a weekend. And, you might have to keep it for a month, but you drop it. So, because again, it's expensive for most people, for everybody to subscribe to all of these streaming services. You say, well, what am I watching? What do I need? What do I don't need? Or you go, I can give up these shows because I find that I have plenty to watch on these streaming services. So there's got to be probably significant turnover. I think probably less on Netflix than the others, because I just think Netflix is almost like, there's always something new. There's always something.
Yeah, they'll have five, six new series a week, and
Yeah,
then
and they're
they'll cancel
international.
things. Yeah.
Yeah, they're international. So,
Yeah.
and if you're, I like looking at watching shows from all over the world. So for me, there's always something on Netflix, but it's got to be related to, I'm a Marvel viewer. There's nothing new on Disney. I've seen it all. So I think we are at the point where you can start to pick and choose which streaming services you're using. And the streamers are retaliating by saying, well, we're not going to give it to you every week anymore. Or they make sure that they schedule these shows so that as something's ending, there's something new you might want. That's very similar.
Are stalwarts like Seinfeld and Friends and Cheers and Frasier and other comedy, Golden Girls, whatever, do they just keep chugging along and continue to get decent numbers?
From everything I know, they do, because they're timeless. They're not necessarily, I mean, as I've always said about Friends, it's either who you want to be, who you are, or who you were. So it's like Bugs Bunny for adults, if you know what I mean. Bugs Bunny would stay on the air forever because they were always replenishing the 2 to 11 year olds. So we go, what's that still doing on the air? Well, there's a whole lot of kids out there who've never seen Bugs Bunny before. And I think Friends hit that nerve, which is there's always going to be a new generation who go, oh, I want to be like them. Even though it's 25 years ago or whatever, you still go, I like that. I'm looking for that kind of bond and friendship. Or I
And
remember.
it was a well-executed
Yes.
show, and it was genuinely funny.
Yes. And what's very important, and we used to talk about it at NBC a lot, is it's smart. And smart goes a long way towards people liking things. And I don't mean
Yeah,
that
but
as
not
from
bad, but you
elitist.
don't have a lot of smart now when you're looking
No.
at Lopez versus Lopez and Connors and things like that. The neighborhood, you don't have a lot of smart.
Well, yeah, they don't know how to do beginning, middles, and ends and tie it all. I mean, Seinfeld was the ultimate, just tying it all together at the end,
And last question. We talked about suits a little bit. And it seems to me, I know in my day as a showrunner, I was always complaining to the network that they're not promoting me enough. That promotion was so important to get your promos on various network shows. But it seems to me that it's even way more vital if you're on a streamer. That you are on their main page, that they promote you. And if they do a big splashy promotion like they did with Suits, they turned that show, which I did watch on USA, and I was a fan, but it absolutely blew up. And what's interesting about that is you have the comparison that after it went off the air, USA, it was on Amazon. It was on Amazon for a number of years and did eh. But when that deal was up and they went to Netflix and Netflix made a big full court press, it blew up and became a huge hit. So it seems to me. If you're on a streamer, and like I say, they'll do five or six new premieres a week, they can absolutely make or break your show, can't they?
In the case of Suits, there's a little thing about royalty involved in,
Yes, there is, but I had Aaron Korsh, who is the creator of the show, on the podcast, and he talked about that, and he said, ironically, when that stuff was happening, and she was starting to date Harry. It was like the last season of Suits. And he said, I thought, well, that's going to bring a whole group of new people to the tent. It didn't. He said, our ratings weren't affected at all.
But I mean, but since then, there's been a lot that's gone on, which has drawn attention to her and
Right.
their
And it's a
relationship.
good show. People. Watch a few episodes and they go, where has this been?
Yeah, no, I watched it entirely on USA. I mean, that's why I'm with you. I mean, I did watch the show. I might not have thought it was interesting to watch. There were some interesting characters, let's say, but I think, and this gets me around to this notion of what scheduling is nowadays versus what it was when I was doing it. I mean, I think that homepage is crucial to getting people to watch programs. And I think that it's still not perfect, but I think that if how you position Suits or any show on your homepage is a major factor. It's not so much promotion, in my opinion. It's seeing it there, or they have, if you like this, you might like these shows, and that's usually way up there in terms of a line. And you go, okay, well, it's easy enough. If they have good descriptions, it's easy enough to say, okay, well, I like this, and this sounds like something I like. So I think a lot of it is how where when you turn when you go to Netflix, what's sitting there? What's that big thing on the top?
Right.
What's right below it? The big thing on the top is generally something new, but then you before you even get to your own list, you will see like recently it. I think that's all very important, and that's why I'm saying that the library isn't as important as what's contemporary, what are you offering me now. And if you're offering me enough now, I never get around to seeing Die Hard 3 or whatever, because there's just, I mean, I can't, well, we try and limit our television viewing, but I always have about 15 shows that I plan on watching at any given time before I would even think of getting to something that's been on forever. And a lot of them, I just, after a while, I go, I'm never going to watch that. Move on. So, yeah, it's really, and again, if you think about it, and I do believe that a lot of ASUS is a good show. It's a networky kind of show. You have the tabloidy aspect of it, but by the time it got to Netflix, the vast majority of consumers have never had. A either didn't even know about it, or they knew about it but they never watched it.
Right.
So you always have more people available to watch everything that's on television.
Yeah. I found this was about a year or so ago. I was looking at Deadline Hollywood, which is the online trade paper,
Yes.
and it said NBC canceled this certain show after 3 seasons. And I went, I've never heard of this show.
Right,
How could there
exactly.
be a show on the National Broadcasting Company that lasted 3 years that I've never even heard of? And I'm thinking to myself, you know what? They didn't promote it on Sunday Night Football. I'd have no idea what it was, because
That's
that's
right.
the
That's what I was.
only thing I watch on NBC is Sunday Night Football.
That's what I was going to say, is that if they choose not to put it on live sports, where you're getting more of everybody, as opposed to saying, well, this is only men watch this, you're not going to see a lot of broad. Or if they don't put it behind something that's relatively well viewed. That happens to me all the time, where I go, what? Even, by the way, it's even true on the streaming services.
Oh, yeah.
Well, they'll go, this was, we're not. Oh, that's the other thing that's so fascinating, is that it used to be a time where the networks were accused of canceling shows too quickly. And now it seems like the streamers are doing it much faster than the networks. That
Yeah,
show
plus
that you know
there's
existed.
cliffhangers. And
Yes.
so I think the problem with that too is I know I, for one, will not watch a new show that comes on until I hear good word of mouth about it, or I know it's going into a second season, because I don't want to get trapped where I'm into this show for 6 episodes and then it's over and it's like, well, wait a minute. How's he get off the cliff? What happens
Well,
here?
I'll tell you the funny story to me has always been 24, which Fox, when I first got there, was notorious for canceling everything. And here Joel Surnow comes along with a show that's going to A, be 24 episodes, and B, one day in the life of this guy. And the initial reaction, I remember at the press tour, TCA, was, why would anybody watch this? It's on Fox, and we all know you're going to cancel it after 6 episodes. And that, even internally, that was a long discussion about, are we going to stick with this show, and or is this show going to just be DOA, because the viewer is going to go, I know you're never going to, we're never going to see the end of the day. And fortunately, it worked out. But that was a big discussion with 24.
Yeah. Today you do that show on Netflix and it's called Eight.
Right. Well, I actually pitched the idea of daylight savings time to get 1 hour off of it.
I think the cast would have certainly appreciated that.
Right.
Preston, as always, this has been great. I learned so much, and I so thoroughly enjoy our
Well,
conversations.
thank you,
So,
Ken. And you ask enough questions, interesting questions, for me to act like I know what I'm talking about.
Well, I only keep this podcast going so that we'll be able to
Every
do
year.
this once a year. So,
Right, exactly. Right around baseball season.
right. Thank you,
Okay.
sir.
Thank you.
And there you go. That is part two of my interview with Preston Beckman. Try to have him on once a year because the industry really changes. If you go back and you hear his interview from 4 or 5 years ago, it's fascinating how different the world of television is even from 4 years ago. So our thanks to Preston, and we'll have him back again next year. Okay, our thanks as always to Adam and Susie Meister Butler, to Howard Hoffman, Bruce and Jason Miller, and John Wolford. My email address, should you wish to reach out to me, is HollywoodLevine@Outlook.com. That's HollywoodLevine@Outlook.com. I am also on Instagram, Hollywood and Levine, where you can check out my cartoons. Back next week with more right here on
Hollywood and Levine.
Look around. You can find cars like these on AutoTrader. New cars, used cars, electric cars, maybe even flying cars. Okay, no flying cars, but as soon as they get invented, they'll be on Auto Trader. Just you wait. Auto Trader.